From Oreos to organic apples, we're learning about transitioning to a diet that is healthier for us and in the long run, much healthier for our environment. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's easy for people who live in a world of relative food abundance to judge others for what they eat. But the fact is, 1 in 9 people does not have enough food, and we should be grateful for every nourishing bite. These are the words, the insights from author, filmmaker, and director Josh Takkel. His new book is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my goodness, you're safe. You know, we were scheduled to talk with you some weeks ago, but the wildfires in California forced you to evacuate. The Thomas Fire, which is now California's largest in history. Are you okay? Are you settled again?
We are, as of about 3 days ago, back on our property. And, of course, we're settled back on the property, and now the mudslides have happened, and half of our crew have had to leave again to take care of their families and get them out of harm's way. So it's an ongoing problem for this community.
What are you seeing right now?
Well, I think what we're seeing really, if we kind of step back and look at this from a 50,000-foot view, is this is our failure on a number of different levels. And when I say our, I'm talking about California, I'm talking about our community, but I'm also talking about our world. We've failed to sort of prepare for these mega climactic related disasters, but we've also failed to look at the real causes. And when I talk about causes, I'm not talking about necessarily chemistry-based problems like carbon in the atmosphere, but localized problems in the environment caused by soil.
And when you mean by soil, what is it about soil that is so important to us?
Well, that's a great question. Most people, when they look at soil, it's just dirt. It's the stuff we walk on. But if you look at it in a different context, soil is really the basis of all life on the planet. Our bodies are at least as much microbial cells as human cells. Those microbial cells are the same as the cells in the soil. So one of the characters in the book actually likes to say, humans are just dirt on legs. And that's when we really start to realize, wow, okay, we're deeply connected to this medium. And when we look down in that medium, a handful of healthy soil, not dirt, not sand, not dust, which is what we see increasingly around our planet, but healthy soil, a handful contains more microbial living beings than human beings who have ever lived on the planet. So we're talking about an extremely complex web of life. That web of life is the key to storing carbon and storing water, and balancing local ecosystems.
In your book, you really break down what is inside soil, and there are even the littlest things that are like the internet of the soil. Can you explain for us really what is going on inside the soil? What's in there?
What is in there? That is the basis of a growing number of scientists' research. You know, I like to say you could fit all the greatest soil scientists in the world in a room, because this is relatively new science. 10 years ago, scientists thought they understood 10% of what was going on in the soil. Today, they tell us they think they might understand 1% of what's going on. What we do know is this web of life that extends across healthy soils. And when I say across healthy soils, there is one type of fungus that that can live in areas that are hundreds of thousands of acres large. And these funguses interconnect, and they actually transmit information. So a plant can say, essentially, I need a certain element. I need a certain mineral. And that can be delivered through a fungus, through microorganisms in the soil, from another plant that is far away. So what we're learning is not just that there is microbial life that can store carbon because microbes pull carbon out of the atmosphere, but that this life is actually intelligent.
We're talking right now with Josh Tickell. His new book is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. He's also a filmmaker and director. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you see what you eat as an extension of protecting our land and soil? Is there something that prompted you to change a habit to better protect the land? Do you consider the food you eat an ethical decision? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Josh, Wisconsin has a long, long history of a conservation ethic. The land is really important here. Can you explain what you call the soil lution?
Yes. Essentially, as I just mentioned, microbes pull carbon out of the atmosphere. Now, if you think about healthy soil, everyone pretty much at one point in their life has come into contact with that black, rich, earthy soil. That stuff is black because it is rich in carbon. The reason soil needs carbon is because the life in soil is actually in an aquatic environment. It's in a semi-aqueous solution. In order to get that water into that soil and keep it there, the soil is a matrix of carbon, kind of a carbon sponge, almost like if you've ever seen a picture of what carbon fiber looks like under a microscope. It's very complex webs of carbon. That carbon is the infrastructure that holds micro droplets of water that, suspended in the soil, keep this life alive. So the dance of carbon and water inside the soil is so vast that we can actually capture the majority, potentially all, of the carbon dioxide that humans have emitted into the atmosphere in the world's soils.
Why is climate science then focused on other fields if this has the immense potential that you claim?
I think two reasons. Humans are very much geared to look up. We've always, you know, when you look across science, you see science is largely about what's going on in the upper world. To some degree, science has been about medicine. That's where biology fits in. But the second thing, if we look at the trajectory of science over the past 100 years, it's largely based on chemistry. And that chemistry has been, let's say, studied in order to build the man-made world. And if you look at the man-made world, it's primarily the world of industrialization. So how do we take something, manipulate it, turn it into a product, use it, and turn it into waste? That's been the drive of what we've studied. We haven't had a lot of need for how does the planet really function? Why are we connected to the soil? These are questions that don't actually facilitate industrialized society. But now, as we approach 10 billion humans on a planet that is ever more fragile, you know, the United Nations says we'll have 1 billion refugees by 2050 if we don't deal with these problems. That's a lot of people. So not just 1 in 9 people not having food or having food insecurity, 1 in 9 people looking for a home. That's not a situation we can infrastructurally deal with. So I think science is going to have to shift gears, and I think it's going to have to happen very quickly if we're going to live and live well on this planet.
Josh, help us make a leap to regenerative agriculture and where that comes in.
Well, consider your state, Wisconsin, a big dairy state. Today, dairy, cows, anything to do with cows has become a hot-button issue for environmentalists, especially around climate issues, a global warming debate, and with good reason. when you confine cows, when you put them into pens, when you feed them corn and soy, they emit copious amounts of methane. They also stop doing something which cows essentially evolved to do. Cows are very similar to bison. In fact, we have about as many cows today as we had bison in the United States when Europeans arrived. So it's not that we have more bovines or more of these four-stomached creatures, but we're treating them very differently. Now, regenerative agriculture, in contrast, uses the cow as a tool. We use something called mob grazing in regenerative agriculture, or rotational grazing, where cows are moved on pasture almost once a day, sometimes once every 2 days. And they're rotated in a way that stimulates the growth of grasses, because grasses are one of the most powerful carbon sequestering rooted plants. So cows also defecate on the soil. Those defecations are steaming mounds of microbes that kind of jumpstart the soil like a yeast culture. Regenerative agriculture aims to use not just plants, but plants and animals to keep the soil covered and keep plant growth on the soil. One of the tenets of regenerative agriculture, never leave the soil bare. Bare soil emits water and it emits carbon dioxide. Covered, healthy soil draws those things in. So regenerative agriculture aims to use plants and animals to really create deeper, healthy, more nutritious giving soils.
Let's bring in David from Ironwood in this point in the conversation. David from Ironwood, Michigan. Hello, go ahead.
Yeah, I take his point about the cows and the methane. Thank you for telling me that grass-fed cows do a lot better job. I suppose when you take in the growing the grass and stuff might help cancel out that methane stuff and probably make less of it. But, yeah, I've been avoiding beef and eating more chicken because of the methane. Also, the whole thing of bottled water, I mean, the amount of fuel to move that stuff around and bottle it and stuff, where why don't we just go from the tap? I mean, letting our public water systems get so bad that people have to buy bottled water is not the way to go. I agree with your guess. It's 100% sustainability. And what she said, it just makes so much sense.
David, thanks so much for the call. Josh, it sounds like David, too, is saying, you know, switching from beef to more chicken, but that also could have other consequences.
You know, I say one of the things that I absolutely agree with the overall environmental movement, the vegan movement, the vegetarian movement on, is if you can do one thing in your diet, avoid factory-farmed meat completely. And that includes chicken and beef and pigs. Because ultimately, that method of squeezing animals into confined structures, feeding them foods that they aren't designed to be fed, copious amounts of antibiotics, pesticides to keep the flies down, it is an absolutely deleterious cycle. And we're propping up that system by our food choices. Americans eat a tremendous quantity of meat. So can we begin to support farmers and ranchers that farm in nature's image? Is it more expensive? Generally, yes. That means you eat less meat, generally. So, okay, what do you put in your diet? Well, legumes, grains, and the things that scientists have been telling us for some time that are more healthy. So, you know, I don't take a position that people should not eat meat, but I do take the position that if we're going to create healthy soils and balance the climate, we need to get away from factory farming completely.
Josh Tickell's new book is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. He's also a filmmaker and director. His first film, Fuel, won a Sundance Award for Best Documentary in 2008. You can join in at 800-642-1234 about your food choices. Do you see what you eat as an extension of protecting our land and soil? Is there something that prompted you to change a habit to better protect the land? Do you consider the food you eat an ethical decision? What's more important, the environment or high-quality foods? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment. The majority of our calories come from bulk foods found in bags, boxes, and cartons that are generally in the middle of the supermarket. We are traveling the edges of the grocery store this hour, learning about the regenerative diet. The book is Kiss the Ground. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How much do you research the way your food is grown? Do you know how and where your food is grown? Relevant questions as we look at this approach to a diet. Josh Tickell stays with us. Your insights on the regenerative diet at 800-642-1234. Do you consider the food you eat an ethical decision? What's more important, the environment or high-quality foods? Must you choose? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Nathan, who joins us from Madison. Hi, Nathan.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've changed sort of my diet to some degree because of how food is processed. I now get meat from a young guy. He's 25. His name's Jacob Marty. He's in Monticello, Wisconsin, and he's turned his dairy operating farm that his dad operated for years, multi-generation farm, into a regenerative farm, and the meat just tastes better. I feel better when I eat it, and I know it's being processed in a way that's not like at a CAFO or a major feed operation. And so I really am excited about particularly a younger generation that's getting into regenerative agriculture. And I'm interested in other ways in how we can build community around supporting farms and regenerative agriculture, where we can be more connected with one another through wanting to eat better, healthier, and closer to the land.
Nathan, thanks so much for your experience, your observations. Josh, what do you think of what Nathan is saying here?
I think we're seeing a lot of millennials get into this. It's ultimately, you know, there's two ways to farm and ranch. And the traditional way that's taught at land-grant universities that's being practiced today, and I'll probably upset some farmers, you'll probably get some upset calls in a minute, is driving farmers bankrupt. And the evidence is that we're losing tremendous quantities of American farmers, and it happens every day, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Farm debt is radically increasing. Farm income is going down. Now, if I was head of the USDA, that would be on the front of every report, a graph showing the farm debt going up and farm income going down. Average farmer in the U.S. makes about $2, but you need $20 an acre to survive. So we as American taxpayers, we pay the other $18. We spend about $20 to $25 billion a year propping up what is mostly a monocrop corn and soy industry. Who makes the profit? Well, factory farms make profit. Chemical companies make profit. They sell into that. And we as Americans really lose. Millennials, I see a lot of young people getting into regenerative agriculture, because they can make up to $100 an acre. That's not an inflated number. We've seen multiple farms do that at large scale, 5,000 acres, which is twice the size of the average American farm. So we know that this is profitable. We know it can be done. What's more, it generates more nutrition per acre. So it's a win-win-win situation. The difficulty and the reason why young people are the ones to sort of do this and buck the system and be disruptors is because there's not a lot of infrastructural support. There's not labels. There's not sell-through to grocery stores. This is a farmer's market kind of driven movement at this point, which means you've got to be willing to be an aggressive young person out on the land doing things differently. And you've got to be really proactive with your customers. The young man who just called in knew the name of his supplier. Mm. That's a cornerstone of this regenerative revolution, is connecting with the people who grow our food.
You say we should also swear off milk and dairy products in favor of hemp products. Wisconsin's governor just signed a bill allowing farmers to grow industrial hemp, but this is still very much America's dairy land. What is your argument here?
Well, this comes from both a health perspective and a climate perspective. If we look at large purveyors of dairy, Starbucks being one of the largest purveyors of dairy, you know, they're really propping up the GMO corn and soy industry. And they do that by establishing a system where the profit in the milk is coming directly from the low commodity prices, which we prop up as Americans through tax dollars, of corn and soy. That's how the money is made. So it's not as if we're paying ranchers to keep cattle out on the land where they're regenerating soils. Instead, we're paying ranchers to go out of business and cattlemen and dairymen to go out of business, which they continue to do, because of the nature of the system is marginalizing their work and their input. So, you know, look, I'm not against dairy as a healthy out on the land solution, but it is totally unrealistic to say that we're supporting a healthy industry.
Well, there's the economics of the situation, but there's also taste. I mean, practically speaking, what if your kids won't drink hemp milk?
You know, there are many, many alternatives out there these days. Not all of them sustainable. I'm certainly not going to say, hey, don't support the corn and soy monocropped industry and then say drink soy milk. But ultimately, you know, humans are the only animals that drink the milk of another animal. And let's face it, dairies, cows evolved to create this lactating milk from their breasts to increase the weight of an animal from, let's say, a couple hundred pounds to 900 pounds in a few months. A lot of humans who eat a lot of dairy find that that's the problem that they face. So, you know, we've got to find healthier alternatives, both for us and for the climate. That doesn't mean Wisconsin can't have a healthy dairy industry. It absolutely can. In fact, I think it should. But healthy means healthy for the people, healthy for the cows, and healthy for the planet.
Take a trip with us around the grocery store, if you will, for a moment, and tell us some easy switch-outs that we can make to take the first step toward this regenerative diet and also toward restoring the environment.
Well, one of the things that folks forget is we vote in America, most of us, the lucky ones, we vote three times a day. And we do that with our forks, our knives, and our spoons. And that may sound a little like highfalutin, but the agricultural industry that exists today only exists to serve us food. And the food that we eat was designed by food scientists who then gave things to marketers who told us that that's what we should eat. And the average American today, if we look at the American diet, the way a grocery store is designed, and what we grow in the country, they are directly mimicking one another. So the average American eats 63% of our calories from processed junk food. The average grocery store, the vast majority of what's in the middle of it, is reprocessed monocropped corn and soy. So corn syrup and all of the different variations of weirdness that come from corn and soy. And of course, then we look at what's grown in America. We grow less than 5% of fruits and vegetables. That's just weird. So the regenerative diet aims to reverse all of that and says, why can't you get 50%, 50%, half of your diet from fruits and vegetables? That's what the Harvard Medical Science tells us we should be eating. Get 25% of your diet from healthy proteins and 25% from grains. As you walk in the grocery store with that in mind, all of a sudden, what's on the outside of the store becomes very important because that's where you're shopping. And what's on the inside of the store, not so much.
Yeah. So, you know, also the expense of that, though. A lot of people say it is a lot more expensive to buy those fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. And then you add the layer of if they're organic, that can also add additional cost. Is there a cost difference between buying your food this way and going with these more processed meals?
There is a cost difference, and here's how it breaks down for most Americans. We will spend less per person than most countries on food for the first 20 to 50 years of our lives. And then we will spend almost 2 to 3 times more than other Western nations on our medical bills for the rest of our lives. Because we are obese as a country, because we have high rates of diabetes, we have incredible rates of heart disease. Now, all of this is related directly to diet. People can say, yes, it's related to exercise. It is, but nutritional science more and more and more points to it's not genetic, it's not even that related to exercise, the new science is pointing. It's really related to diet. So the question is, where do you want to spend your money? Do you want to spend your money in a hospital bed when you're 40 or 50 years old and for the rest of your life going back and forth? Or do you want to think about your food budget today? And the reality is, fruits and vegetables are not that expensive. The reality is, grains, even organic grains bought in bulk, or legumes, beans bought in bulk, are cheap. And the reality is, we probably eat a bit too much meat. So can you lower the meat, buy more expensive and less of it? And can you buy more of the nutritious foods that actually feed your body and your mind?
Let's bring in Ann to the conversation, who joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Good morning. Well, when you started the show, you said, what's more important, a good environment or high-quality foods? Well, if we have a healthy environment, we automatically have high-quality foods. So what you're saying is kind of a contradiction of terms.
So, Ann, how do you approach your food then?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not as good as I should be, but I try to buy organic, and I try to do more locally sourced foods, and I am trying to get more off the meats. But like I said, with a healthy environment, we automatically have higher quality foods.
Ann, thank you so much for calling in. Josh, is it not an either-or thing?
Yeah, Ann has a good point. This is not mutually exclusive.
Mm.
In fact, it's mutually inclusive. And I think that's the... You know, she makes such a great point. That is the driving idea, is our bodies are connected to the environment. We are connected to the planet. And we've disconnected them through flashy marketing and glitzy, colorful things and fizzy things and salty things and sugary things and tasty things and advertising. We forget our food comes from the soil. That's where it comes from. So can we increase the life of the soil? Can we build topsoil? Can we sequester carbon dioxide, pull water into the soil, take it out of the atmosphere where it contributes to larger and larger storms, and at the same time grow more nutritiously dense food? The answer is absolutely. In fact, the two are directly linked.
Let's bring in Chris now from Adams. Hi, Chris. Hi, Chris. Are you there, Chris?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Go ahead.
Oh, that was instantaneous. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just moved on to a place that is about half an acre. About half of that is taken up by buildings. But that is more than enough land for me to grow substantially what I need to eat for the year in terms of vegetables. And a vegetable garden is not a tough thing to do for anybody. You don't have to buy vegetables at the grocery store. That's the first thing I want to say. People eat so badly in this culture that I go to the grocery store and the cashiers say to me, you eat really healthy. Because most people just want something that they can pop in their microwave and put in their gut, and they don't really think about it. People don't read labels. I try and instruct people.
Chris, what do you grow in your garden?
I don't have it put in yet. I just moved into this place, and we don't have any dirt here. All of that wonderful soil that he's talking about, we don't have any. We just have sand. There's 137 feet of sand underneath me, and I have to dig that all up and put stuff in.
So you'll have to transplant soil come spring.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Chris, get your back ready.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen. It didn't happen this year because I was moving, but it will happen next year. Well, yeah, it's a project. And then you got to figure out what to do with the sand.
But anyway, I've invited people to come over and just cart it away. People who have nothing but clay in their yards, they can just have it. They can bring a truck over here and just take it away from me. That would be okay. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to say is that right before I moved into this place, I was living in the middle of about 3,000 acres of corn and soybean production. And every single day in the summertime, from 6 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, I was being dive-bombed by planes dropping junk on all of these fields and polluting not only them but me and the environment and the animals and everything. And it's horrible. It's just horrible. It's like people should just plant a little garden and take care of their own needs. I have a friend who was...
Kristen, I'm going to have to cut you off here, and I want Josh to be able to respond. There is the whole pesticide issue as well in controlling crops.
There is, and it's a big issue. I want to talk about that, and I also want to mention before we talk about that, if I may, that Wisconsin has a lot of different types of soil. You have 800 different types of soil in your state, but you're one of the few states that has how states have a state bird or a state animal. Your state has a state soil, and mm-hmm. It's called Antigo silt loam. It's actually a soil that is developed under hardwood forests, and overall very productive, very rich soil. So that's just a fun fact, Wisconsin's state soil. Do we have time to talk about pesticides?
We do. Yes, go ahead.
So I think Americans have been sold a bill of goods that is untrue when it comes to our food science. We've really been given this idea that the Feed the World campaign can feed the world, when in fact what we look at, and I'm going to get to pesticides, but I want to go to the MetaView first, and that is in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the Feed the World campaign really came on very strongly. That campaign was to support something, another sort of 1984 speak thing called the Green Revolution. Well, the Green Revolution wasn't green at all. It had everything to do with more pesticides and more chemicals in our food. It also had to do with genetic engineering, mainly for corn. So you've got this onslaught of media and publicity around the need to really scientifically produce food with these great wonder chemicals. Well, what happened was, from that time to today, two things. A, we used exponentially more chemicals, and in the book there are charts based on USDA data straight from the source of that data showing that exponential rise. So we exponentially more chemicals and pesticides and incrementally more calories, meaning to get a small increase in calories, we used way more chemicals. And now, today, we use 3 pounds of toxic chemicals on our food per American per year. It is the largest chemical experiment in human history.
We are learning about regenerative agriculture and food choices this hour with Josh Tickell. His book is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are the little things you do in your diet, in your garden, perhaps, that make a difference? What prompted you to change an eating habit to better protect the land? How are you teaching the next generation to support the planet? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll return to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. The number one complaint people often make about eating an organic, healthy diet is that it's financially out of reach, too expensive. But over half of what Americans eat is processed calories, they're costly as well. We're talking about changing to a diet that is healthy for people and the planet with Josh Tickell. His new book is Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. You can ask a question about regenerative agriculture at 800-642-1234. Do you think one person can make a significant impact on the planet? Are individuals the answer? Do you prefer a farmer's market to a supermarket, but you find yourself buying shrink-wrapped broccoli anyway? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Mary now, who joins us from Butternut. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Go ahead.
The way he was talking before about grocery shopping, you know, the outer edges, that's the only way that I do my grocery shopping. And the only time I go into the inner aisles is to get my oatmeal, tea, and honey. Otherwise, I avoid them because the food just makes me sick anyway. And I like to grow my own food, and I can my own food because food that comes out of tin cans has a really funky taste.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for the call. Josh, another thing on the inner part of the aisle, Mary getting her tea there, other people might buy their wine there. You advocate switching to organic wine?
Absolutely. Obviously, wine is a commodity that's more and more grown in the United States through grapes, but most people don't realize those grapes are not washed. So those toxic pesticides that we talked about earlier, they're sprayed copiously on those grape fields to keep the pests and the herbicides, to keep the weeds down. Those grapes go directly into the winemaking process without being cleansed, meaning you're directly ingesting that nasty toxic stuff when you drink your regular wine. So we see a resurgence in organic wines, and even better, biodynamic wines, which generally...
What are they?
The same. Well, biodynamic is a system of... It's a regenerative system of agriculture, essentially, meaning you're going to integrate animals into the process, not use the pesticides, not use the herbicides, and really work with nature to boost that soil productivity.
So how can people make these small changes in the way they use their food?
I think, you know, for each of us, food is a deeply personal thing. For some people, it's you know, religious, really. So when you tell people, look, you're eating this, it's bad for you, there's always a level of resistance. But here's what I like to say. What would it be worth to you to live well and live long and know that the food choices that you're making are impacting the world, you know, really acting very locally like your own body and affecting things globally? And the answer to that question for most people is, does that mean that I have to give up X, Y, and Z? And this is a process. It's not a diet guide that's going to lose you 50 pounds in a week. It is a mental and physical and emotional journey. And since writing the book, my family and I have been on that journey. And you never essentially get it 100% right. You know, you're always going to eat some thing that's a fast food thing. You're always going to eat something and think, oh, you know, I know that wasn't the best choice. But that's human nature. You know, we see with our eyes, we taste with our mouths, we want that immediate gratification. I think the bigger question is, can you invite yourself and can you join the other people in the movement and get on the journey? Get on the, what can I change today? What can I do better that I did yesterday? That's the real question, because it's food and our health choices are a life process. They're not a instantaneous, you know, change for most of us.
Let's go to Eugene, who is on the phone. Go ahead, Eugene.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I raised my own garden, and I grew up right after World War II. From late spring until late fall, my lunch would come out of the garden, including rice, potatoes, carrots, tomatoes, and wash them off in a water tank and go. And I raise my own garden, and I eat more organic as much as I possibly can. And if I make it till a 7, my health is very good. I'm still climbing 18-foot ladders in an apple orchard. And if I make it till the 17th of this month, I'll be 79, pretty much. And I'm still substitute teaching. But I can't say enough about just staying on a good diet. I tell the young people this. You'll live healthier all the way around.
Well, thank you so much, Eugene, for that. Josh, it sounds like he is living proof.
That is my hero right there. I want to be Eugene when I'm 79 years old.
Let's go to Shadera, who joins us in Madison. Hi, Shadera.
Good morning. I'm calling because I think for myself personally, as a single parent, a disabled single parent on a very limited income, I think that there are a lot of affordable choices. One, here in Madison, we have the city of Madison has what's called double dollars, and any if you are a SNAP benefit recipient, so if you receive food stamps in Madison, you can go to any of the designated farmers markets, and they will double your dollars up to $25. So, say $25 spent at the market would then double to $50. So I've been able to feed my children very well because of this program in Madison. We buy our eggs, our cheese. I buy it all directly from the farmers, which gives us, a really healthy attitude towards our food. We're a lot less wasteful, and it's a way to support our farmers here locally, but also it's something that I hope that more people become aware of, because it's very gratifying to be sustaining my family in a healthy way, supporting my community and our local farmers.
Shadera, thank you so much for calling in with that tip and your lifestyle. Josh, what do you make of that?
Well, it's heartening to hear people get their kids involved in any way, shape, or form into these decisions. That, you know, people complain about this way of eating being more expensive without ever trying it. And I have people that will go to a farmer's market and use food stamps. Most farmer's markets now use the EBT card, which is the federal debit card that's issued to food stamp recipients. Most farmers accept that at farmer's markets. And another thing that's important to know is I've never been to a farmer's market and seen somebody who has $5 and wants to buy $10 worth of broccoli or lettuce turned away. You know, farmers want to sell that material. They don't want to put it back on the truck. And if you're in need and you say, hey, you know, help a brother out, you know, here's how much I have, I need to feed my family, can you give me a discount? I've never, ever seen a farmer say no. So you're dealing with the producer, you're not dealing with the middleman, they don't have to make a markup like a middleman. That's something that people forget, is we're entering a time in our economy where we're really connected to the source. And that's a powerful thing when you deal with farmers markets. The last thing that the lady mentioned is getting your kids involved in this process is incredible. Like taking your children, it's one of the things we talk about in the book, how many opportunities there are for you to take your kids, get them onto a local farm. The vast majority of American children think that, you know, something that comes in a box, a bag, a carton, or a tube grows on a tree. Teach them, take them out, learn yourself. It's incredible what engaging young people in where their food comes from will do for them for the rest of their lives.
Shadera, thanks so much. Let's go to Steve now in Fitchburg. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I may not sound supportive of this, but I am. The lady who called a while back talking about trucking sand out and bringing soil in or building soil up strikes me that that's we need to use the land in the way that it's supposed as it is, and match our use to what the soil will give us. I grew up in eastern Nebraska, and underneath all of Nebraska is the Ogallala Aquifer, and water used to be 20 feet down. Now it's much deeper, and that's where the pivot irrigation system was invented, which turned that into farmland as opposed to ranchland.
Mm. Good observation there, Steve. Josh, what do you make of that? Meet the land where it is.
That is the ideal. I think Steve has a good point. You know, one of the things that we look at in Kiss the Ground is can we reverse terraform land? We have, since the Green Revolution, we've lost a third, 33% of global cropland. That is astonishing. The same revolution that promised to give us genetic engineering has actually reduced farmable land by one-third. So the answer is, yes, we can reverse desertification. Yes, we can begin with sandy, silty soils that have almost no life, and we can build them back up. There is a process for doing that. We outline that in the book. But, of course, the regenerative agriculture movement as a whole, that's actually the ultimate goal, is to bring back to life the 33% of land we've lost since the late 1970s.
We have just a little bit more time to squeeze in one more call. Ashley is with us in Hilbert. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm just calling. I'm one of those millennial farmers that have went out and started their own farm. And I just wanted to tell everybody, you know, the importance is if you want these types of foods, you know, you as a consumer have that choice and you can, you know, change where the food system is going. You know, we work really, really hard to provide these types of foods for people and, you know, going out to the farmers market, you know, grow what you can, but go out to the farmers market, meet the farmers, and buy local is really important to keep this food movement going.
And Ashley, we're going to end it there. Josh, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, and thanks to your wonderful listeners there in Wisconsin.
Josh Tickell is the author of Kiss the Ground, How the Food You Eat Can Reverse Climate Change, Heal Your Body, and Ultimately Save Our World. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We can continue this conversation over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can certainly add your thoughts on how you approach regenerative diet and the things that you grow in your garden. Join us on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Stay with us today. Coming up next, it is On Point. Thanks so much for listening.